Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Religion would not even be an issue except for the Bible.
Before we get carried away, let's read our Bibles now.
I can assure you there are millions of Christians who did not take parts of the Bible literally.
Forfeit all claims to your own authority. Stand without apology on the only authority that matters, which is the authority of God Himself entrusted to us in His Word.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Precision in language. This is Wretched Radio. This is not a diatribe that is so presumptuous that we would possibly... Oh, could be a tirade, but no, it's not any of those things. This is not going to be a lecture on how to cure all of the racial ills that we are witnessing on Fox, because we're evangelicals and that's the only news network we watch. This is not intended to pontificate on issues that I'm as aware of as any other human being who lives on the planet. I suspect there are some racial experts. I'm not one of them. This is merely my observation offered with the hope that maybe, just maybe, as you go about the business of making your way through the swampy weeds of this racist conversation, should say racial conversation, then maybe this is just a little bit helpful. Maybe. Just a little. And I think precision in language would be so helpful right now. Are you watching the TV, you listen to the different guests, the different pontificators, and you find yourself going, well, no, that's not... And they seem decent enough, and you read perhaps some things from good conservative evangelicals, and you go, well, that's not... And we're even seeing on the internet some shots being fired back and forth from evangelicals, I suspect, that would be on the same theological team most of the time, and yet... Because I believe we are lacking precision in language. We are finding ourselves talking past each other and getting a little bit on the annoyed side. In an effort to share why I believe precision in language could help an awful lot of these problems, let me share with you an email that I received from a fellow who was annoyed with me. I mean, we get lots of those, but this particular one was because I talked about the issue of white privilege. And I said, I don't believe there is any white privilege, because I don't think the word privilege is the right way to describe the way the system is set up. And I think it causes us to actually get annoyed with one another. And this is my mere offering to the conversation. I actually think a lot of the stuff and the fighting that we've been seeing would go away if we would just start using better, clearer language. To a degree, I think some of this stuff could be cleared up. Not all of it, as Tavis Smiley so aptly demonstrated last night on the O'Reilly Factor, when Bill O'Reilly responded to Tavis's comment that it is open season on black men in America. Wow. That's a statement. And so Bill O'Reilly asked the question, do you know how many black men were killed by police officers in 2012, our most recent statistics? No. Bill O'Reilly informed him, 123. Tavis Smiley's response, I don't believe you. Those are just statistics that white conservatives have grabbed to try to win the argument. Okay. they are what they are, and I don't think Tavis was going to be persuaded otherwise, because I think Tavis, too, is suffering from a lack of precision in language. Let me state this very carefully. Is there some sort of reasonable concern that the black community has toward police officers in general? And I think the careful answer to that is, in some places with some people, I think they have some legitimate concerns. But that's a radically different statement than it's open season on black people, isn't it? I do not believe that the issue of Michael Brown captures what could be a legitimate concern.
As Bill O'Reilly rightly pointed out, 123 black men being killed when there are, I believe, 43 million black people in the country is hardly open season. Now, you'd prefer not to see 123, but the causes for that do not automatically infer racism. They could be justifiable. They could have very valid reasons for shooting and killing. And so more thoughtfulness needs to be put, more precision needs to be put into statements that are being made. And I don't think Michael Brown is the test case for what could be a legitimate beef by the black community. We read this too. Now, let me finish the whole thought before you get annoyed with me. We read too many stories from reasonable, reliable black men and women who would say, I've experienced a treatment that I do not think was warranted by white police simply because I'm black. Now, could it be in our country that there are some police officers that do indeed arrest, pull over, interrogate, handcuff, force to the ground people simply because they are profiling? And the answer to that is yes, I think we could agree with that. Now, it raises all kinds of questions. Is profiling reasonable? Is it reasonable to pull over somebody who looks like a thug, dresses like a thug, walks like a thug, maybe is swearing like a thug, and say, I think that person is a thug, regardless of skin color? I think that that's something that we could talk about, isn't it? I think that we could have a conversation about how often that happens and what we should do about it, because maybe while there are instances when black people are being taken down, arrested, pulled over when they should not be, that police have some valid concerns because of the way certain people present themselves. And that leads us to the issue of white privilege and the importance of precision in language. Let me share with you this letter. I'm a podcast listener, and this is, by the way, this is a friendly letter from Joe. I do want to tell you, though, I was slightly offended when you implied that white privilege is merely an appearance and not a harsh reality of the world. As long as we're talking about precision in language, Joe, rather than saying you were slightly offended, I mean, look, if I'm talking in an offensive way, I'm sorry. I don't think I am. No, it could unwittingly be coming across like that, but I don't think that I've ever been like, ah, white privilege, that's stupid. And you're dumb if you believe. I don't think that I've been doing that. Maybe just you disagree with me. I would like to state why I disagree with you rather than being offended. He says, don't take my word for it. Below is a cut and pasted excerpt from a sermon and a link to a sermon from Matt Chandler, who says black privilege is very real. Look, I like Matt Chandler, but I disagree with what Matt said. Not because of what he said, but because of how he labeled it. Hence precision in language. I think Matt has valid points, and his observations, I think, are mostly accurate. But to put them underneath the category of black privilege, I don't think is the correct way of stating it. Precision in language. Here's what Matt said. Let's just acknowledge this is not just an Anglo issue. And this is not a white-black issue, or a white-Latino, or a white-Asian issue. Let me also say this. Predominant culture privilege. White privilege is a reality. Now, predominant culture privilege. Let's focus on those words. Because I think the word predominant is important. Every culture has a predominant. But a predominant what? Privilege? If something was set up with an attitude that said, just based on your skin color alone, you will have advantages, I would not call that privilege. I would call that racism. I would call that wrong. I would call that sinful. But the question for our country and your country, if you're in Australia or England or Canada, Is that the way your nation is set up? Is that the way your nation behaves predominantly? Is there a boss somewhere who is hiring people? Nine white guys walk in and one black guy. The one black guy is more qualified than all the white guys. Now, if he hires a white guy, all other things being equal, just because he's white, don't call it privilege. Call that racism. That's what that is. That's a sin. Now, privilege, if we're gonna bore down on that word, I think the reason that people are misidentifying and using the word privilege is because the predominant culture, blank, exists in every culture. Let me take you to the island of Boingo Boingo. On the island of Boingo Boingo, all of the people who have jobs wear khaki pants, blue shirts, and a red tie. That's just what they wear there. That's the way they do it there. Now, how did that get there? Well, the early Boingo Boingoese, fashion changes, time, some influences of culture. The majority of folks kind of just dressed that way, and then it kind of became the way we do it. It became our culture. Every culture has a culture. Now, in Boingo Boingo, it's khaki pants. In France, everybody wears a beret. In Germany, they all wear lederhosen. Now, that's just dress. There's other issues. Music. There's food, of course. That is the culture. Now, how did it get there? Well, there are a lot of explanations. Time, who started it, who got the thing going, the influences, all of that. But ultimately, forgetting the history of it, that's just the way every place is. It has a culture. Now, if somebody on the island of Boingo Boingo walks into the job interview with blue jeans and a T-shirt and doesn't get hired, would I say, oh, it's because the khaki pants people have privilege? No. I'd say, well, that's just kind of, it's the way it works. And if you don't get with the system, you're bucking the system, and you're going to feel its sting. Now, in America, here's how it basically works. If you walk into a job interview, when you're walking out on the streets, when you go into a department store and expect service, the American culture says, overall, I'm generalizing, don't be offended by this, overall, this is how we dress. Women don't wear burkas. You're going to be looked at askance if you wear a burka in this culture. Why? Because that's not the way we do it in our culture. If you have a certain, you don't wash your hair, and you look greasy and unkempt, and you've got long fingernails, and there's dirt underneath them, and you're barefoot. Are the other people who have got shoes on, their nails clipped, and they wash their hair, are they privileged because they get taken care of in the department store? No, they're just with the they're doing the culture. And you walk into a job interview, and if you got droopy drawers, and you're showing your tats on your neck, and you got piercings through your face, and your hair is all matted, and you don't get hired. It's not that the other people got hired because they've got privilege. They are with the program of that culture. If you want to get ahead in this culture, I think we can safely state, overall, it doesn't matter what your skin color is. It depends on how you present yourself, what your skills are, how hard you're willing to work. Do you have a criminal record? That's the culture. It's not privilege. And if there are times when a black man or a black woman does not get the gig simply because of skin color, it's not because the others have privilege. It's because the guy's being racist. So stop with the privilege talk. Stop. And now if you can prove me wrong on this, I'm open. You school me on this, I'm open. But when you call Beep Talk to critique what I've just said, make sure you use precise language, because This is, I believe, the problem. We're just throwing terms. We're slinging language all over the place. And we need to be more precise in our language. Call things what they are. Label them as they are. And the term white privilege, I think, is a complete misnomer. Matt Chandler. Predominant culture privilege, white privilege, is a reality. No, predominant culture is a reality. And you get stuff if you get with the program. If I go to Germany and I refuse to speak German, I'm not going to say, oh, those Germans, they're privileged. They've got German privilege. No, you're a knucklehead because you refuse to get with it. And I can't blame them because I am being treated poorly because I won't get with the, not privilege, with the culture. Could it be that a lot of what we are seeing is as simple as that? I think so. If you disagree, 1-877-282-BEEP, 1-877-282-BEEP. In the meantime, we have our latest grand jury sentence from New York. Christian, what do we have to say about this one? This is Wretched Radio.
How do we as Christians confront our culture with a message that is offensive without being personally offensive? Prepare to go face-to-face with our lost and confused culture. Join Todd as he dares to proclaim the gospel at Georgia Tech, the University of Georgia, and the Minnesota State Fair. Speaking the truth in love is a delicate balance, so get your copy of Face-to-Face at WretchedRadio.com today. Remember, your purchase helps us proclaim amazing grace. Thank you.
Violence throughout northern Nigeria continues to impact Christian families. On September 24th, members of the militant Islamist group Boko Haram attacked a village in Borno State for the second time in recent months. In this attack, the insurgents targeted a pastor as well as the homes of Christians.
Pastor Guama was returning from a church program when the insurgents recognized him and killed him. Immediately after killing the pastor, the insurgents went on to burn the homes of Christians and kill 18 other people. Pastor Guana had been a pastor for just 5 years. He's survived by a wife and 4 children.
To learn what it means to serve God in Nigeria and many other restricted countries, subscribe to the Voice of the Martyrs free monthly newsletter at 875-VOICE. That's 875-VOICE. Call 875-VOICE. The Voice of the Martyrs is a Christian nonprofit organization.
I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but children are little sinners. The great news is that the Bible has tons of information about dealing with sinful people, even those who are small and share your last name. Drive-By Parenting with Dr. Ted Tripp will transform the way you parent and change the tone of your entire home. Drive-By Parenting at WretchedRadio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
It's time for a drive-by minute.
The most important thing that we can be teaching our child at this age is...
to be people under authority.
You're under authority, mom and dad, to somebody, a boss, government, certainly God, and it must start with your child learning they are under authority immediately. Your authority, God's authority.
And if you think about it, when we let our children be independent decision makers, we give them an appetite for a liberty that does not exist, because nowhere in God's plan for us are we independent people without any authority over us. We always are under authority, and real freedom is found in God's ways. Psalm 119, verse 45, I will continually obey your law forever and ever and will walk about in freedom, for I have sought your commandments.
There is no freedom without the law.
That's right. That gives us freedom.
You can get Drive-By Parenting and all of our Drive-By resources at WretchedRadio.com.
You can learn Biblical Greek. With Wretched Radio's It's Not Greek to Me, you will understand the language of the New Testament. It's Not Greek to Me is so simple, Todd Friel could teach it. Actually, Todd did. And you will learn to use Greek dictionaries and concordances, and you will understand all those Greek references from the sermon on Sunday. Get your copy of It's Not Greek to Me at WretchedRadio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
books of the Bible. John, the beloved disciple, author of the Gospel of John and Revelation, also wrote three epistles. In this first epistle of John, the apostle has one main concern, that we may know if we have eternal life and if our faith is genuine faith. If you want to know that you have eternal life, turn to 1 John and see what he has written for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's not what you think.
This is Wretched Radio. It's not that. I just need some coffee to go with these wretched chocolate truffles. Oh, look at what Roger and his family sent to us here at Wretched. They're truffles.
Roger Patterson?
They're just beautiful. Roger Patterson. Hey, don't you...
Sent those to you.
I didn't get any. I think he sent you some deer jerky, if I'm not mistaken. So no lamenting in Minneapolis, here in Atlanta. And he sent this block of fudge.
Oh.
If in about 15 minutes, when it metabolizes into my system and I start sounding like I'm whipped up on crack, just blame Roger Patterson. Look at what they did. They spelled wretched on the little truffles right there. That took some doing. The other night, took Mrs. Friel out for our 24th anniversary dinner. We ended up...
So between you, you've been married for 48 years.
It's not that. We don't think that anniversaries are nifty and stuff. But like 24. 20 was cool. 25 will be kind of, but 24, it's kind of... 23 even less, though, because it's not...
You're sounding like my son.
Well, that... We agree on this. Yeah, no, we agree on it. It's kind of a, that's just, so we're on the same page, I think. So we went to dinner, ended up at the same place we went to dinner on our 20th anniversary, because the place that we planned on going to closed. We pulled up to it. It's not open. You know, so much for planning in advance. So we end up in the exact same place, and we get put in the same booth that we sat in on our 20th anniversary. Now, what are the odds of that happening? Well, I say... 100%, because, God apparently intended that to happen, and I believe in providence and sovereignty. So, we sit at the same table, and I was reminded of how old we are becoming by sitting at the same table for our 24th anniversary. You may
recall. How old are you becoming?
How old are we becoming? Well, it was 4 years ago at our anniversary. We sat at this table. And I wanted to kneel down and ask my wife if she would remain married to me for the next 20 years. I thought it was romantic.
Ew.
So I pushed the table away from the booth so that there's some room there.
Yeah.
And as I'm going down onto one knee, my wife started saying, What are you doing? Why are you going? It's filthy down there. They probably never vacuumed it. Get off of the floor. So I'm getting down. And then I'm trying to be romantic. Ow! 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 And I pulled a muscle in my hamstring. That's how you know that life is pretty much
better and better.
All done at this point. It was so romantic. So thanks for the truffles. And on the little plate, they gave us a piece of cake, and they'd spelled happy anniversary, just like the Pattersons did with Wretched. That's what made me think of it right there. And it makes the back of my leg hurt being reminded of it. All right, you have just heard my little contribution to the racial conversation in America. Now, ultimately, we know that cleverness, precision in words, is never going to change a racist heart. It is only the gospel of Jesus Christ that removes that. Why? Because racism is a mark of the fall. We are racist because we are in Adam. Now, even when we're in Christ, we still have the vestiges of sin. We've got a new nature, and yet we are not yet perfect. Racism is because of the fall. It is because of sin. And everybody has that disease, so everybody is inclined to be racist. And here's my contention, and you can argue with me if you'd like to. I'm okay with that. I think everybody's racist. Everybody. You name the best civil rights leader you can think of, and frankly, I'm hard-pressed to come up with one, but just the same, the best one who would decry racism, I believe also because they're sinners, at some level, occasionally in the past, has been or is racist. Because it's a part of what we struggle with.
It's like lust. It's like coveting. I know it's not in the Big Ten. Well, it is actually under murder, because that's what racism is. It's murder. I'm better than you. I dislike you. What did Jesus say? When you think that way about somebody, so I think that it's at least a cousin of murder. And I think because of the fall, we all experience it. So only the gospel is going to fix our sin problem. But I believe that precision in language would sure help the conversation a lot. Let me share with you from the letter that I received from Joe. This is a quote from Matt Chandler. Now, you've heard my little diatribe on language and precision in language. Let's see if we can have a one-sided conversation with Matt Chandler and change his mind about his belief in white privilege or predominant culture privilege. Just lose the word privilege. Yes, there's predominant culture, and that's not wrong. That's not wrong. Let's make our way through. He writes, or spoke and preached, there are doors that are available and open to Anglos that we did not have to kick open, that were just normative to us, so normative that we don't even know they exist and will get offended if someone brings up white privilege. Okay, is that true? There are doors that are available and open to Anglos that we did not have to kick open. Yes, that is true. Back some time ago. But now the doors are open, aren't they? Okay, they had to kick them open. They did things that got America's attention. But over, where are we at in this country with equal access and equal opportunity? And if people do not have it, it is not privilege, it's racism. Because ultimately, this is how it works. That Chandler wrote, I worked hard. Well, sure you did. But listen to me, brother. There are a whole slew of people who worked hard and didn't get the opportunities you got to outwork that hard work or to work out that hard work. White privilege is a reality. Let me suggest to you, it is not white privilege. It is sovereignty. There are some people who are born with more opportunities than others. There are some who... I'm never going to be the head of a Fortune 500 corporation. I'm just not. I didn't go to that school. I don't have those connections. Furthermore, I don't have those skills. So do I think that the people who are born in those places have more privilege? I wouldn't call it privilege. I'd call it sovereignty. And if they do have advantages because of where they are born, then I say congratulations to you. God has provided advantages to you. Now, I can say that, whatever my level is, when I look up, and people who are below others should be able to look up and not say, privilege, we should say, sovereignty, God has put you in that position, and it's got its baggage, so I'm glad you got it, congratulations. And then I look at the location where I am, the status where God has put me, and I said, this is what God has done for me. That's not privilege. It could be an advantage. I grant you that. But I will tell you this. If a black man is born into a family that has millions, and there are plenty of those families, I wouldn't think their skin color, it's not fair. We, as Christians, we can't say that. Where I was born is not fair. Your lament then is with God. Your argument then is with God who puts you there. And so to Matt, if we were chatting, I would say I think that the word privilege has become a junk drawer word that's too all encompassing. And it's not helpful. And it's misleading, and I think that it causes a further divide. It doesn't bring about reconciliation because it doesn't identify with precision the actual situation. Let me just state it again. If somebody holds somebody down simply because of skin color, that is not privilege. That's racism. And if we talked like that, how many people in America would go, nah, there's no problem? We'd all be on that team, wouldn't we? And we'd also, we gotta work on that. We've got to fix it. The Christian solution would be the gospel. The world would probably have programs and indoctrination through the public schools. But just the same, we'd all be on board, wouldn't we? Furthermore, the issue with what people perceive, right or wrong, to be police dealing with an entire community differently because of their skin color. That's to simplify the issue. I think we can agree on this. And this is not intended to be antagonistic or racist. And if it is, I truly apologize because it's not the intention. There are certain ethnic groups in our country, not entirely, but predominantly, that have issues. That's just the way it is. I mean, it's just cultures work that way. And right now, in the black community, there is a big problem. There's a big problem. The unemployment level, big problem. Education, big problem. Fatherlessness, big problem. Those are all very big problems, which are producing very bad fruit. Very bad. The fatherless issue, single mothers, generations being raised by women, single moms. It is not good for kids. God did not design it that way. Not having a good education because of the dynamic. Look, how it got there, I don't frankly care, except to learn. That's where a lot of people are in that community. And because of it, there's a higher level of crime than there are in some other communities. Now, can we talk about that and then state, let's get to work on that. If we are being racist, we'll get to work on that. But then let's get to work on this community to help it. And I think if that would happen, to me it's like the border issue. I think the two sides would come together. I really do. Why is the border issue and immigration so contentious right now? I think one of the major causes is because the border's still open. I truly believe, if a big wall, fence, missiles, whatever it would take, had been built all the way from California to Florida, well, I guess it's not in Florida, they don't pump up again, wherever it is down into Mexico, Louisiana, Texas, whatever it is, all the way up, there's no way not one Mexican can get into this country illegally. And if that had been taken care of, and let's say it had been 5 years, let's just say, do you think that if our current president came along and said, look, there's logjam in Congress, we can't get this fixed, here's the plight of these people, we need to talk about doing something for these people, I suspect at least we could have a civil conversation about the issue, here comes the A word, amnesty, if that had been in place, I suspect. And I think the same thing is true if both sides would be willing to go, okay, if we've got issues, point them out scientifically, bring statistics, bring studies, bring results, bring the records, and we'll chat about it. But I don't think we're willing to be that honest on either side. We need to be willing to admit we can be racist. I think if the black community would admit, we've got some problems. Wow, off to the races we could go if we use precision in language. We could be helping our culture. Now, that was part two of my little diatribe on precision and language. When we come back on Wretched Radio, we will hear from the very skeptical face of Tony Vercanis, who has said, no words. Forget precision and words.
I was just listening.
Uh-huh. Next on Wretched Radio.
We beg God to tell us exactly what to do. We try to interpret signs or we lay out places. Think there's a better, more biblical way to determine God's will for your life without regrets? There is. Get your copy of Decisions at Wretched Radio today, because it's time to stop wondering if you're living in God's will. So do yourself a favor. Forget the fleeces. Get Decisions at WretchedRadio.com. And remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
This is John MacArthur inviting you to join me for Portraits of Grace. To most Christians, the idea of rejoicing over unrighteousness is repulsive because it suggests enjoying deliberate, wanton sin. But rejoicing in unrighteousness also encompasses our subtle attempts to justify sin. For example, the humanistic philosophies and blatant immorality of our society can quickly dull your moral and spiritual senses. So you begin to read and watch and listen to things that denigrate God, that exalt violence, crime, and immorality. If so, and you find them entertaining, you are rejoicing in unrighteousness. True love will never do that, never rejoice in sin. It will delight whenever righteousness prevails. If you love God, the things that please Him please you, and the things that offend Him offend you. This is John MacArthur, trusting your lives are portraits of grace.
If pornography is a part of your life, it's time to be finally free. Keith Lambert and Todd Friel will take you through 8 biblical strategies that actually work. So if you're tired of going it alone, or if you've tried other ideas that just didn't pan out, Finally Free will help you be finally free. And isn't it time? Get your CD and be finally free at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
Now here's a clip of one of our favorite pastors here at Wretched Radio. This is Adrian Rogers.
Take a log, put it on the cradle there in the sawmill, and run it through. Turn that log, run it through again, and it'll cut off the other side. Turn it again, and cut off the other. And then, finally, you have a log from the outside, perfectly square, perfectly straight, but look at it from the end, and the heart is still crooked. That's the way men are. That's what reformation is. You may clean up the outside. You may say, well, I am good. I am as straight and square as a man can be. But the Bible says that your heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Therefore, if a man is a drunkard and he stops drinking without getting saved, he'll go to hell sober. What I'm trying to say is that man has a problem, and the problem is on the inside, and you might as well admit it. You are a sinner, not primarily because of what you do, but because of what you are.
It's reasonable to prove the President of the United States lives in the White House by looking through the windows of the White House. Likewise, it's fair to look in the pages of Scripture to see if God inspired the Bible. Beyond the shadow of a doubt does exactly that. You will be convinced the Bible is supernatural. Your copy of Beyond the Shadow of a Doubt is waiting at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
Lexicon. There are many words to help us understand the nature of the Bible. Words like sensus literalis. The Bible is to be read in the literal sense, the way the author and original audience would have understood it. There is no code, no secret meaning to be uncovered. The Bible is plainly written so that all people can know God through its pages. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, here we go. This is Wretched Radio. All right, Tony.
I'm sorry.
Was I bloviating to no end? Was that a contribution or just completely kafritz? What say you, sir?
I say you're correct. We need to be more precise in our language. We also have to have a meaning for the words that we're precise with.
And make sure that everybody's on the same page with
the
definition.
So that we're all on the same page, yeah.
All right. So in other words, what you're saying is Matt Chandler is a heretic. I think that's what you just said.
Let me look that up.
Did I take too many leaps there?
Maybe just a little stretch. Well, what?
Predominant culture. I think he captured it with there is a predominant culture.
In every culture.
In every culture. And if you get with the predominant, the river will just, it'll keep you flowing in this culture.
And no matter what the liberal folks want you to think of, we're never going to have utopia.
We're never going
to have the place where everything is
right.
Perfectly equal, and because sin happens over all the time.
It's not just liberals. It can also be post-rivers, but you know.
It can be. Don't tell me Matt Chandler's a post-river. Wait!
I don't know what he is. Okay, so maybe, just maybe, that is helpful. Now, here's a conundrum. This one is fascinating. The story of what is happening in New York City. I suspect there are probably protests going on right now
they seem to be more peaceful. Now, I wish people would stay out of the streets.
Only in Minnesota do we block off a major highway with protesters, some of whom are upset about the decision from Ferguson, and some who are upset that they're not making $15 an hour at McDonald's.
Are they closing off the roads because people are marching in the streets? Is that the idea?
Well, actually, they're kind of laying down on 35W North, okay, which is probably not a good thing.
Okay, that's not a peaceful protest. That's especially in Minnesota. Nobody can hit their brakes and stop on a dime in the wintertime. That's same thing was happening in Atlanta. People are going, they're out in the streets, closing down the road. One news story, it showed a fellow who happened to be black because, well, let's face it, the context of all of this is skin color anyway. And he got out, and they were filming it. He's like, hey, people, I've got to get to work. I've got a wife. I've got kids. You are keeping me from my job, and I could get it. You're hurting people. Another woman, she was white, on her way to work at the hospital. My shift is going to start. If you want to protest, if you want, then please don't cause people harm by burning down their building or by blocking traffic. And please, would you please be precise, not only in your words, but in your demands? I think that's another reason that I'm so high on the concept of precision of words. I'm waiting. What exactly does Al Sharpton want? What exactly, Tavis Smiley, are you seeking? Jesse, what's the demand? Please, if you could just be precise so then we can analyze it and talk about it precisely, we could perhaps come up with some sort of resolution. Part of me just thinks, wow, we are so incapable of communicating well these days. Maybe, you know what we should do? This whole conversation, just anybody who talks about it, 140 characters or less. That's it. That's all you get to say. Maybe then people would be more...
Everything at tweet level.
Just pretty much all we can handle these days. So now in New York, the situation with the man that you saw being put into a chokehold, taken down onto the ground, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And the grand jury, same system that happened in Ferguson with Michael Brown, same system, except more people. I think it was 23 people, maybe 25 people on the jury, half white, half either black or Hispanic, came back, majority voting, where he's not going to go to court, that we're not going to take him to court. Because he violated police policy by putting his armor on the fellow's neck, but he didn't break the law. And so because he had his badge taken away, I believe he was, I don't think he's working on the force anymore, it was dealt with, therefore, it's not going to go forward to a court case. Now, how did you feel about that decision? The Michael Brown one, here's my observation. A lot of people were like, hey, look, we didn't see it. Nobody saw it. The grand jury had all the evidence, so we trust the grand jury. On this one, I'm hearing more people go, I think they made a mistake. I think that, because, wow, we saw it. Now, that could be the difference. That could be the difference. But it seems to me that because I don't know all of the rules for grand juries, I don't know all of the evidence, I don't know what the charges were, don't I have to rely on that decision the same way that I rely on the Ferguson decision? Or is it possible that maybe the grand juries don't always get it right? Because if you, having witnessed the video, are saying, I don't think that was right, then you and I are doing the very same thing that we scolded people for doing with the Ferguson grand jury. And I'm seeing this one as a bit of a conundrum for some of us. Which is it? Now, apples and oranges, to a degree. One was videotaped, one was not. But we're still relying on a system. Because this issue to me is big. When a people rebels against the law, the government authority, the police, you are seeing a full-out rebellion against God. That's what this is. I stole this from Dan Phillips. He wrote about this at teampyro.blogspot, some of his observations about Ferguson. When a people overthrows the government that God has instituted, you not just have anarchy. You don't merely have terrorism. You don't just have a societal challenge. What you're seeing is a real spiritual fist shake. This is like, wow, you're seeing brazen sin against the sovereign when you watch these images on the news. When people are laying down on Highway 35 or whatever the number is in your town. Because they appear, I think, as best I can tell, are stating, we don't want that system anymore. Nobody's articulating their demands, so it's hard to know. But it seems that they don't like the grand jury system. They don't like police overall. Okay, wow. That's making an accusation against God. See, as Christians, even a bad government we can submit to. Why? Because we know God put it there. Good or bad, God raises them up, he knocks them down. Period. There's no biblical debate on this. You got a stinker government, you probably have a stinker people. And that's your reward from God. So God puts these institutions in place, the government to protect, to save, to keep us safe from bad guys. And when people overthrow, woo, it's rebellion against God, not just against the government. So we're seeing a deep sin problem here. Who's going to fix that? Jesse Jackson? No. Who's going to fix that? Barack Obama? No. The Republicans? No. The church, the gospel, this is a major sin display. This is far more than rioting and looting and laying down in streets. This is rebellion against our Maker. In action, you're watching it. You're watching it. You are watching the rebels trying to overthrow the king and his representatives. So you're seeing something far more profound on TV than just tear gas, gunfire, and looting. You're seeing rebellion against God. Who has something to say about that? It is only Christians. It is only we who can fix this problem. You don't evangelize, then you're not helping the problem. Now, you don't evangelize so that racism goes away. You evangelize so people get saved and God gets glorified. And guess what? Racism goes away. So if you never witness, if you never share your faith, I don't know that I should be complaining a lot. I can comment. I'm not dopey, I get that. But I'm not sure that I have a big pulpit that I can stand in if I'm not doing something to fix the problem. And the problem is sin. The solution is the gospel. So, what is your response to the New York grand jury ruling? And if you said, oh, I looked at that video, man, they shouldn't have done that to the guy. I think the grand jury had it wrong. Then you have to be willing to say to the people in Ferguson, even though they wrongly responded, okay, you've got a case. You've got, okay. I think I can understand where you're coming from on this issue. Without quibbling about the details. I can get that. Joey, you were just saying earlier that Tabiti Anabwile has been talking about that, I think, better now, perhaps, than he hasn't. Now, it's not that he didn't say this in the past, but it seems like that this is perhaps more of his message now. When we see these situations, regardless of the right or wrong behavior of police, two men died. The Christian response, regardless of skin color, is, oh no, that's a tragedy. And might I suggest that before we start parroting Rush Limbaugh, we want to just slow our roll a little bit. Rush Limbaugh, citing a case, this is in Illinois, I believe it happened in March. I watched this video too, last night. It was a white kid who got shot by a non-white officer. Don't know if he was black, Hispanic, Asian, don't know. And Rush Limbaugh has said, okay, look, black, white, and he was unarmed. Where's the outcry? Where's the outrage there? Thanks for your observation, Rush. It's an interesting point. But when we use the death, right or wrong, of a kid, thug or outstanding citizen, we are being a little bit less than Christian. We are not considering, we're talking about human beings here. We're talking about people. Do we rejoice when Saddam Hussein gets hung from a rope? Carefully, yes, a little, with tears. He's a wicked man, and when wicked is stopped, we rejoice at that. But when a wicked man is hung and goes to hell, I don't use it as a joke, or as a talking point, or as a stick to slap the back of my opponent's heads. That's not the way to participate Christianly. And I know. It makes it sound like you're soft. Right now, out of the tens and tens of people listening to me, they think just for saying that I'm being soft. Not. Saying we need to dialogue like Christians. So, what is your ruling now on the New York grand jury case? Did they have it wrong? Or do you have to say, like perhaps you told people in Ferguson, the grand jury decided, zip it, live with it. Okay. The timing on this is kind of fascinating to me. Very fascinating to me. And last thing, if I could, maybe. All of us, I think, need to be a little bit more careful about how definitively we speak on this whole issue. I'm watching this on the Twitter sphere. I'm watching it on the internet. I'm watching it. If you're a theologian, bring some theology and some general thoughts and so that people can apply it. But rendering verdicts as if we're experts on police affairs and police matters, I got to tell you, now, was it in Ohio where the kid had the BB gun? Where he was in 12-year-old in the park. I think it was somewhere in Ohio. And he's running around with two hands like he's Starsky and Hutch, you know, shooting with his BB gun. Somebody called, somebody's got a gun. So the police pull up, put it down, and the kid starts wagging it at him. Now, is it a BB gun? What is it? Now, somebody told me, and I don't know if this is accurate, that they were informed that it was a toy gun. Well, it didn't turn out to be a toy gun. A BB gun, a pellet gun, is not a toy gun. It's a gun. Maybe not as strong as something else, but it's a gun. And they shot him, and the boy died. Tragedy. Tragedy. And I'm hearing people weigh in on this and stay, and it's like, you know what? Until maybe, just maybe, you've spent at least 5 minutes in a pair of police officer's shoes, and unless you have had to pull up in a similar situation and be confronted by that, might I just lovingly say, zip it? These guys, wow, I hate this. I agree with Charles Barkley. Oh, yeah, I know. Look, these guys, these gals, they risk their lives for us. Are there some stinkers out there? There've got to be. They're sinners. But overall, let's be careful how much we criticize the men and women in blue. Until next time, go serve your king.